Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021.
Today, ratio analysis. I'm going to do something here. Now, this is a complicated thing. Ma'am, I'm going to start with you. 8,622.3685. 17.0. Now, you're probably wondering, what in the world am I doing here? Well, I'm giving you numbers. And you know what? Those don't mean a darn thing. Not a thing. You see, the thing is that I can make you calculate numbers all day long. I can show you the formulas, which I will. But if you don't know what those numbers are about, where they came from, what were the basic ideas that behind the calculations? Where are they used? Those numbers don't mean a thing to anybody. This is what finance is about. The numbers, yeah, we can calculate those. As a matter of fact, I can show you a website. Everything that I'm going to show you in the next few, in the next 30 minutes or so, every number I show you, formula, you can go to Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage. You have a free subscription as a student here at this fine university. And you can get every one of these ratios and probably several hundred more by just typing in the name of the company. It'll calculate all of them in the blink of an eye 5 years back. And so the same is true with these numbers too. They don't mean anything to us unless we put them into real context. So when I look at Yahoo Finance, I gotta stop doing that. Yahoo Finance. Now, sir, is this a bull or a bear day?
Bear day.
Okay, again, it's bear, not bear, it's bear, you know, like bull. You gotta be forceful. Yeah, is it a staggering, horrible bear day? You know, the zombie apocalypse is upon us, and we gotta do the double taps and the cardio and all that? No, it's not. Whew, my references, I've gotta modernize my references. Okay. Huh? What, the dark side? Yes. The only one that was significantly down. As you can see, notice that you have kind of an inversion. The Dow and the S&P were down. Not much, but enough that there was a consistency. There was a little bit of a sour tone. And the NASDAQ was down more, of course, more risk and a bigger drop. So that kind of tells us that there was negative sentiment in this market today. Now, where was the negative sentiment coming from? Well, again, you can have all these different pundits saying this, that, and the other thing was a cause of it. Well, it was the Afghanistan debacle. It was the potential for a war between China and Taiwan. It was the resurgence of dubstep music in mainstream. Who knows what's going on with in a day like this. I mean, I was talking to traders today, and you know, it was one of those days where no one really had a, wow, this is what did it. Nope, it was just a bitchy day. It was just, there was just a sour, you know, chip on the shoulder kind of thing going on. Okay, but if you go over here, oh goody, yeah, crude is trying to find its feet again. Again, it's not having a lot of traction getting up there to $75 a barrel, but that's what it wants to do. Yes, it'll get there probably sometime around the middle of this semester, maybe it'll, a little after that. It'll find its feet again, but for now, it's just sort of fiddling around up there in the upper 60s per barrel for the time being. Notice that gold and silver really didn't have any traction either. It's just a crabby day all around. Probably the money's here in bonds. I don't know. Yep. Well, you're saying, oh, wait a minute, fat boy, that's a red number. Yes, but that's a yield. the price goes in the opposite direction. So bond prices were going up today. That's why the yields were going down. So in other words, what we're seeing here is that money was flowing out of equities. You see that? Selling off the equities. That drops the price of them. Money was certainly not going into gold or silver. It was going out of those. So we go over here. Well, spank me. There was where it was going. It was going into bonds because the bond prices are going up. That's why the yields are going down. Now, the yields, is there some reason why I can't read these tiny fonts anymore? Oh, that's right. I'm getting old. Okay. Where the, can anyone see? That's almost 4 basis points. I knew that. Four basis points. Not as spectacular. But, you know, in a world like this, in a time like this, the markets seem to be really just kind of quiet. Now, if you come over here and have a look, London, it had a bad day. Interestingly enough, the Nikkei had a decent day, a pretty strong day up. And so we're kind of seeing a mixed story here. The Western world not doing so well. American Exchange, the London, and also the bourses in Europe were also not doing so well either. So we had, but on the other side, the Asian markets were in pretty happy shape today. So there's that. Now, really quickly, let me give you a, let's look at this ginormous monster portfolio, the S&P 500. Oh, look at that. Okay. Was this an intense trading day or a very light trading day from what you can see of this? Talk to me. Intense or light day on the S&P 500?
Seems to be a very light day.
Extraordinarily light. Well below, probably only about 40% of typical volume. Do you see that? 1.3 billion shares. As opposed to the typical day over the past year, 3.2 billion shares. Yeah, that's a market that is just sitting there kind of looking stupid. That kind of explains it. In other words, it was just one of those days when the market was piddling down. The bears were having fun because there wasn't much activity, so there was probably just trimming portfolio, moving some equities into debt into bonds, safer, nothing like a flight to quality. When you see something like this, you wouldn't even call it a flight to quality. It's just a little readjustment, portfolio readjustment out of equities and into debt. Debt being a little safer, but nothing that is awesome here. Look at this. I mean, that volume, when you see volume like that, that's portfolio adjustments and a whole lot of just the usual silly amateurs playing the markets and thinking they're geniuses. That's about all this is for now. So when is the market going to do something spectacular? Well, probably not for a while yet, but it's just like the market doesn't even know what it wants right now. It wants to be optimistic, but at the same time, you do have the problems. We have the potential for a serious conflict in the Middle East. I mean, a nuclear exchange in the Middle East. On the other side of the world, the China-Taiwan issue, you have the resurgence of the Delta variant. Now we have the Mu variant, and suddenly there's a whole new virus that seems to be popping up in South Asia called the Nipahal or something like that. That makes the coronavirus look like a pussycat. So yeah, there's enough to scare us all, and on we trod. We just keep moving forward. But do keep in mind, now really quickly, I'm going to take you over to some financial statements to start showing you. I don't know. A company that is healthy, and don't give me any of this crap with Tesla or anything, AMC. Yeah?
What about American Airlines?
Really? Oops. Oh, my God. I mean, this thing, their planes are letting out gallons of blood out the back door of profit. You know, $10 a share? No, that's not a health. Okay, here's a rule. Positive profit, good. Negative profit, bad. Geez, Zoe.
EBIG.
EBIG. What the? EB. EBB. Oh, you're talking about Beast Buy. BlackBerry. Is that what you want? Oh, BBIG. Oh, what the hell is Vinco? Oh, yeah, there we go. $12.96 a year. You're not touching my portfolio, bruh. See, the fun part, though, is that there's kind of something you're prowling. Always we're on the lookout. Yes, we've got these insanely powerful computers and these geniuses by the hundreds of thousands scouring the markets, but there's still the fact that if you look at history, guess who won when the dinosaurs lost? It was all the little rat creatures crawling around on the ground. So there is something to be said for this kind of investigation of these kinds of companies. I mean, in this case, how can it have a beta of 0.43? That's a very safe, I get it. It's a very safe bet that they're going to lose money. Okay. I'm going to run back and hide in some company that's reasonably large. This one should make you feel better. Lockheed Martin. Now understand, and I do not promote war companies. At the same time, war is a business. And business is usually pretty damn good. So when you look at companies that are safe bets, good, strong, massive, giant, multinational, global, literally interplanetary, already to a certain extent, you look to these giants like Lockheed Martin, Grumman Aerospace, if they're even around now. You look to these kinds of companies that produce war machinery, and all of the other things that go along with a world in conflict. That's what we have, that's what we've always had, and that's what we always will have. Somewhere there's a good fight happening. It's your turn to do that, though. I'll just sit back and say, thank you for your service, or some other lol. Okay, so look, notice that this is a safe company. Do you see the 0.97? Slightly less volatile in a well-diversified portfolio than the world market. Ma'am, does the price-earnings ratio confirm the beta or refute or disagree with the beta? What say you?
It confirms.
That's a low PE ratio. As a matter of fact, the PE ratio was indicating somewhat more safety than the beta is here. But in either case, this is actually a good company. It's very much in line with the world market. It moves almost a one, which would mean if it were a one, that would be exactly the world market. So anyway, as far as Lockheed, that's, by the way, for those of you in live stream, that's LMT, if you can't see the screen up there, LMT. And also notice that staggeringly high earnings per share, EPS of 25.5. That is, in other words, every share earned got $25.51. A really fabulous, look at that dividend, a $10.40 a share dividend. So in other words, if you bought one share of the stock for $351.62, or somewhere around there, you would be the beneficiary. Probably, there's no guarantee with dividends. Remember, they don't have to be paid. But you'd probably get a $10.40 dividend. So in other words, automatically, right off the bat, you've got a passbook savings account in a way, and it's certainly not that in as far as safety goes, of 3%, plus whatever the company gains in capital gains in the stock price going up. That is the kind of company that we put into a responsible portfolio for probably a more stable household or company that wants to invest funds. That's this, what this is saying to us. Now, again, the one-year target, ignore that, whatever. But if you look here, the bid and the ask, there's a little bit of a separation there. Not a major separation, but if you wanted to buy this stock, it'd be $352.33. And if you wanted to sell some shares of it, you'd get $352.21 per share. So in other words, the bid-ask spread is what, 12 cents there? So always remember that you're not going to get what you see up here. That's just a kind of like an average or a mark kind of price. One other thing that's kind of interesting here, notice that unlike the Standard Poor's 500, the volume, the day isn't over yet. The volume, it's about a half an hour. The volume on Lockheed Martin is going to end up being about what it is on a typical day. You see that? It's about 900,000 shares right now, and the average day is about 1.1 million. We got a half an hour left. Yeah, it's going to be actually closer than the S&P 500. And if I'm not mistaken, Lockheed Martin is in the S&P 500. So in other words, this military industrial complex stock is trading more actively than the overall market is. Now, should that bother you? Yeah. In other words, this is the kind of stock that has interest right now. And a lot of times, this kind of gives you a window on what traders are hearing. Okay, we're hearing something that is good news for Lockheed Martin. So we're going to lean our money that we have for buying stocks into this and away from other kinds of stocks that might not be as attractive. So, does that mean that we're about to have a war? Probably not, but I certainly do see some reason to believe that there is some investment interest because of the potential for major conflicts around the world. But like I said, I've always said that's your problem, not mine. Now, here's what I'm going to do. Let me try something here. Oh, will you quit harping on me? Okay, so here's what I have in mind here right now. Bear with me. I'm going to check something, make sure that I've got at least a decent visual. Yeah, I apologize. My camera's not showing the screen very well. So I'm trying to think if there's some way I can get more of the screen in here. Bear with me one moment. Let me try something here. I'm going to pull this back a little ways so the screen shows better for those who are in live stream mode. Really? Can you wear this on your head? Oh, never mind. It's all good. I'm trying to find some way to get this so that it shows more. Okay. I hope that'll help at least a little bit with the top board. Anyway, now, something that I do want to show all of you folks is there's a resource in your, there's a resource in your resources tab. It's financial analysis formulas. And it's just something there. I mean, you can get these kinds of tables about all kinds of places. And all I'm offering you here is the opportunity to have a nice sheet in front of you for doing these kinds of formulas. The truth be told that as far as ratios go, financial ratios, I mean, I had a book, and I still have it somewhere, that had well over 400 financial ratios. If you go to Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage, you will see a staggering number of ratios that are available for any company that you type in. And I'm going to show you that right now if I can. give me a second here. Now, in your resources, you go down here and you're going to see company research resources at ISU. This is, I mean, you would literally pay thousands and thousands of dollars for subscriptions to all of these services, and they're here for you. This is not the open internet where you get all kinds of crazies and weird people and lies and myths. This is the real stuff, peer-reviewed. We don't lie here because this is millions and millions and billions of dollars on the line to get the right information right away. So I do want to promote the fact that this is where you actually do need to go if you want factual information, especially in business. We can't afford to be idiots. We can't afford conspiracy theories. We can't afford all that nonsense. We've got to work with real stuff. Now, Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage, I said Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage. And, okay, we're going to just sit here looking stupid for a while. This used to be a lot faster than it is. Do I need a hand crank to get this to go? Okay, there. Okay, so now, and you, I think I showed this to you before, but I can't emphasize this enough. You are the leaders of the new world, you will be. These are the kinds of places we go to find our information. Now, you can type in, even, now, public companies obviously have a lot more information disclosed than private companies do. But even private companies do have information here in the Global Net Advantage. But what I'm going to do here is I'm going to put in Lockheed Martin. Okay, well, spank me. Look at this, the ratios. And I like to do them the latest on the left. And you're going to say, now, wait a minute. You're telling me that you're going to show us all of these ratios, how to calculate them, and how to open my stupid Excel sheets to get this done. And you, I could go right here and get them? Well, yes. It's like those silly numbers that I told you at the beginning and didn't say anything about what they were. This, you need to know what they are, what they mean, in order to have some use for them in analysis of a company or whatever. So here, one of the powerful tools that we have, of course, is that after you get the hang of what the formulas are doing and what they're telling you, you can go to a place like this and get the information, hands down. And of course, if you're still calculating the second ratio of liquidity ratios, and everyone else has got this whole table of every ratio on earth for the company already done, well, you're not going to win the game. So obviously, this is how we do it in the modern world. We learn the formulas, we learn what they mean, we get the warning signs, what's a good number, what's a bad number, and then we get the services to do the calculations for us. And in this case, I mean, this is just like stupid. Look at this. On and on, and you can even ask for more of them if you really want to. I don't really want to, so they can bite me on that. But again, I can't emphasize this enough. Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, you should be able to mouse over and get a little bit more data on what that number came, where that number came from, for all of these. And of course, you can download the tables, and you can also take the numbers and put them into Excel sheets and then do graphs and all of that. This is where you get from the point where you are just a casual user of data and Excel to the point where you're starting to use Excel in a more powerful fashion. You become more of a power user. Anyway, I've griped enough about that. But here, I'll lay off that for the time being, but I'm going to take this off. And then up here, financial analysis formulas, I'm going to bring this up for you. Now, this is just a basic sheet. Now, most of these are in the book. There's one here that is one of my old-time favorites that the book didn't mention. It's kind of coming back into vogue now, oddly enough. I've seen it being used, but they're not giving it the old name. The one that you won't see in the book, where the heck is that thing? The burn rate, there it is. The burn ratio is an old school formula, and it was not that long ago I saw an analyst, very sharp young woman, writing an analysis of GameStop. And a lot of the ratios look terrible for GameStop. This was back before it really got hot with Wall Street Bets. But she started saying, well, if you look at the cash to current liabilities, it's insanely high. And she gave some ridiculous number, and I thought, that can't be right. So I stopped reading the article, went over to GameStop's financials. Sure enough, that was weird. The kind of burn ratio, it was hidden in these other two liquidity ratios, but they're in the burn. Good grief, that was an amazing number. Okay, anyway, now if you go down through these, some of these are not all that easy to calculate, like the average collection period, finding in your basic financial statements the average daily credit sales is not always that easy to do. But some of these, now another thing about these, well, is there a good ratio as opposed to a bad ratio? Actually, interestingly enough, financial ratios, a couple of things. One is a ratio can be too high or too low, and it's a bad thing. There are some ratios, there's a rock bottom. For example, one here, and I'll show it to you more clearly. Times interest earned, if that is below one, the company is dead. Technically, it's in default, it's in bankruptcy. So the farther, so in other words, the higher it is above one, the better? Not exactly. Times interest earned that's too high is a company that is actually not taking best advantage of gains to leverage. Did you know that a company, now think about how times interest earned. Now notice what I'm doing here. I'm not touching that board yet. I'm talking to you. That's how good analysis works. We talk, we think. Okay, so, and I don't touch a computer for some calculation. I just talk. So now, times interest earned, essentially, if you're looking at the income statement, you drill down to operating income, EBIT. Now, once you've got the earnings before interest and taxes, the next thing you'll do is look at the interest. How much interest do they pay? Okay, suppose that the operating income, earnings before interest and taxes, is $1 million. But the company owes $1.2 million in interest. In that case, you'd have a $1 million over $1.2 million. The company's in bankruptcy. It can't pay its times interest earned. It cannot pay all of its interest. It has $1 million of money available to pay the interest, but it owes $1.2 million, so $1 million over $1.2 million is below one. The company's in bankruptcy. It's dead. It's gone. In fact, anything that is too close to one is kind of scary. Even if you get, there was one that was like a 1.2 EBIT. In other words, it had 1.2 times enough money to pay its interest. That's too scary. That's scary. That's way too close. A little fart in sales, and you're going to have that EBIT go below what's owed. This was essentially the case with Steak and Shake. Steak and Shake, it was clear months ago that they were coming up on a debt payment that they probably, because their EBIT over interest was so close to one, they probably wouldn't have enough to cover it. And so it was clear that they were going to have to scramble before they could pay that, or Tap City, the whole company would be go under. Fortunately, it looks like, from what I know, from what I can see, they knew that they weren't going to be able to make it, or they were barely going to be able to make it. They were okay. They got something done. So even though the restaurant chain is not what it used to be, it's still alive. Okay, let me go on here. However, if you tell me, well, our burn rate, well, our times interest earned, I'm sorry, we have $1 million in interest payments, and we have $25 million to pay that. So you'd have $25 million over $1 million, so times interest earned would be 25 times. Well, that's great. No, it's not. That's terrible. They're using way too much equity. They could use more debt, owe more interest, but they have plenty of money room to pay it, and they could get what we call gains to leverage. Well, let me explain it to you. Ma'am, would you like to be rich someday? I am actually going to show you in this class how it happens, how you can do that. I'm actually serious. I can show you how you can make yourself a multimillionaire, like a lot of these yuppies have done, exactly how they've done it. On the other hand, if you do it at the wrong time, your timing is everything. If you do it at the wrong time, you will be so poor that even the rats will kick you out of their neighborhood. But seriously, I can actually show you that if you use debt in the right way, it literally leverages the equity, your kick. Think about it this way, because debt has a fixed amount you pay, a fixed interest you pay. But if you owe $1 million in debt, and you can use that to make yourself win $30 million, you owe the debt $1 million, whether you win $2 million or $30 million or $100 million. So in other words, by using the debt, I can leverage the little bit of equity that I put into it to create this insanely large effect. This is how people do home buy. You got $100,000? Well, don't use that to buy a house. Use $10,000 to buy 10 houses and use 90% equity debt financing on each of them. That way, if each one of those houses goes up by, let's say, $5,000, $10,000, all of the gain after you pay your interest, pay back the debt, and pay the interest, it's yours. That's how you make a fortune in real estate. You don't, and that's how you do it with a lot of things. So these companies that say, well, we don't use debt. Good for you, cupcake. You're denying your owners, your shareholders, the gains that are possible through leverage. Now, if you go too far, you're creating risk, and if there's a blip, you get killed. But at the same time, just because you've got a very high times interest earned ratio, that doesn't mean everything's great. Yes, you've created a safe corporation, but you've also denied your shareholders the ability to earn extra gains from the debt, from using debt. A couple of other ones here, and I'm going to go through these a little more formally in the class next on Monday. But before I do that, that takes me 15 minutes in an Excel sheet. But this part is the important part. I want you to look, for example, at return on assets. Now, I think I talked about this one before. Net income over total assets. Essentially, that says, let's treat your total assets of the corporation as a portfolio. You put money into it. Your total assets are the value of the portfolio. Net income is how much that portfolio earned. You didn't earn that income anywhere but through your total assets. So essentially what that does is describe how good your portfolio of total assets performed for a year. It's a percentage. So the higher that is, the better. In other words, the higher the net income is to the total assets, the better, just like any portfolio. Unfortunately, that can be a false positive. And I did describe this. I think I did. I can't. Sometimes things are a blur to me. You see, back in the 1970s, the last refineries were built in the United States. After that, no more. So essentially, the oil companies were gaining net income. Net income was skyrocketing. Shoot, all of the oil price increases, all of the hungry fossil fuel chewing vehicles and power plants and all that, net income was skyrocketing. But the total assets were not being replaced. They were depreciating. So every year, more depreciation without replacement of property, plant, and equipment. So the total assets were going down as net income was going up through the 1980s, through the 1990s, and into the 2000s. Do you see how they could make ROA skyrocket by just letting their assets depreciate away and not replace them? And then came the price. Now, that was when I was doing oil and gas down in Texas. The refineries were exploding. I mean, there were a couple of towns that were just, everyone was killed. Just a puffing billow of toxics coming off the plant as it blew up. Families lost their daddies and their mommies, cousins, nephews. Entire parts of families were completely carved away in the explosions. All because the oil companies just couldn't stand to put money into those old oil refineries. You know what? I took a tour. I used to do a lot of energy, as you could probably tell. I took a tour of a coal-burning power plant not far from where we are now in this kind of area of the country. It's one of the things that just knocked me dead. I wouldn't have seen it except for one of the old engineers. He took me through these pipes, and we were walking around in there, down in this, and he said, look along the side. I'll be a son of a dog if there weren't swastikas on it. Yes, that power plant had been built with Nazi equipment before we and the Nazis had a war. 1930s. And then they were wondering why those coal plants were blowing up. I mean, a generator just went literally through 6 feet of concrete and landed in a field about a half a mile away in one case. Damn impressive for coal, if you ask me. Of course, they cheated. The coal dust added to it. So don't be impressed just because a number gets bigger and bigger. Always be a cynical son of a bitch. You have my permission in this case. You need to look at what the numbers are really telling you. Oh, that's a great number. Okay, a couple of guides. How do you know what's good, what's bad? A couple of things. One is, look at the industry. One of the things that's great about Standard & Poor's, you can say, find the industry and show me what the ratios are for the industry. Two problems with doing that, though. One is, there are so many of these companies now, literally, what is its industry? You know, it does things in so many different industries that how do you know which industry to compare it to? Another problem is also, and it's a little subtler. Let me try this with you. Ma'am, do you want to be average? Of course you don't. Me, I aspire to be above average. It turned out, you know, that didn't work. That didn't work out very well. I thought weird would be not average. No, it's just average weird. Okay, you are abnormal, okay? But that might not be a bad thing. You see, I scored so low on IQ tests when I was a kid that I was designated, the term at the time was moron. I mean, that was what they called me, a moron. You know, I was unhappy because I wanted to be called an imbecile because that's what my mom called me. You imbecile? But you see, so sometimes, it's not the average. Wow, this ratio is right in the average of all the industry ratio, Well, maybe that's because the industry sucks, and you don't want to see the. So you have to be careful when you say, well, the ratio for return on equity is 22.5%, And ours is 22.8%. So that's right in the line. Well, maybe you might want to ask, well, what is that industry? Is the industry really in good shape, or is this industry in bad shape? And then that might guide you on whether or not the ratio you're seeing for this company you're analyzing is good or bad. These kinds of things are part of what we do. I'm not going to do that in your class, in a class like this. You take a heavier duty class like my FIL 341, and you'll see more of this talk about industry averages, good ratio, bad ratio. In a class like this, we're looking for more of the, when do we see really unhealthy? Now let me explain these, and like I said, I'll go through these, and I'm going to show you this important formula, these two formulas up here, which are hugely important, not just in finance, interestingly enough, all through science and business and economics. And even in some areas of social sciences, these two formulas are actually surprisingly important. Heck, they're even the basis to a certain extent for calculus. So, I mean, these two formulas, for our purposes, they are going to be highly useful, and they're not that hard to calculate, especially if you've got Excel. But anyway, through here, very quickly, profitability. This simply measures whether or not the company is doing well. The problem, though, is that these gross margin, operating net margin, and all that. A gross margin is simply how many cents of every dollar that went into the cash register survived wholesale. Operating margin is EBIT over sales. So in other words, after the wholesale costs and all of the bills, like the light bills and the mailing and the salaries have been paid, how much was survived, how much of every dollar survived from the cash drawer? And then the net margin, that's how much made it to the point where it belongs to the shareholders. Net income is what belongs to the shareholders. All the debts have been paid in a timely manner. So this is how many pennies of every dollar that went into the cash register survived. Now I'll tell you this right now. This net margin can be anywhere from 70% on down to less than a 1 cent per dollar, and you could have a healthy company. So for example, service companies tend to have very high net margins. Giant industrial companies like oil companies, they might have a net margin of 1 or 2%. But because the scale of their operations is in the stupid hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars, that's perfectly fine. Another example of this. Have you ever shopped at a Dollar Tree? Full disclosure, I am a Dollar Tree ho. I will shop there anytime I can. You know, for Christmas, $10, 10 gifts. Well, each one of those stores has a pathetic margin. But when you have 10,000 of those stores distributed so that if one burns down, it doesn't hurt anything. But when you have that many of those stores, each one generating a couple of dollars a day, my God, every year you've got a company that can make a fortune. Aldi's has the same model. You don't need a massive net margin if you've got a scalable operation. Each piece of candy that was made by the Kraft company earned them less than a tenth of a cent, and yet they built a fortune. We'll pick this one up next week. Right now, the quiz begins. It's in VeggieNet. It begins at 3 o'clock. So go ahead and crank it out there. And that, other than that, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.